You know, for those of your parents who are, you know, dealing with IEPs and the school system and special education, for your neurodivergent child or your child with special abilities, this is going to be the episode for you, because I have a Shelly Cano here, and she is absolutely amazing at helping parents and, you know, guardians, like, just navigate the education system. She's a teacher, she's an advocate, she's a coach. And it was such a great conversation, because I have a beautiful grandson who has autism and nonverbal. And then I have a son who has ADHD. I myself have a bit of ADHD. And so this was really a great, true, thoughtful, real, raw conversation about the challenges and how we can overcome these challenges and really get the services and things that we need for our child, and for teachers to understand how to run a really great IEP so that everybody's on the same page. You're going to love this conversation. Here we go. What up, y'all? This is Nina Perez, and this is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. Thank you guys so much for being here. I'm having such a good time. I love meeting amazing human beings, and I have one for you today. So if you're somebody who is really into learning more about IEPs, loves teachers, all that kind of stuff, I have Shelly Cano here. She's a Christian special education consultant, teacher, best-selling author, master IEP coach, and the host of hashtag No Limits podcast. Now, I really want you guys to pay attention. I have a son who has always struggled. Like, he has ADHD. He's an adult now and everything. I myself have ADHD, and I also work with people that have these amazing special abilities, right? And your host today, she has 30 plus years in special education. So I am super excited that she's here. Shelly has written and led thousands of IEPs and trained, you know, teachers and parents and therapists and even court officials to see the abilities, not the disabilities, in every student, right? So she even has a book. It's called Those Who Can't, right? Those Who Can't Teach, is that what it is? Those Who Can't Teach? Yeah, Those Who Can't Teach. And it really talks about embracing acceptance, inclusion, empathy. And while she has this amazing podcast that has over 200 plus podcast episodes, she really highlights people who have been, you know, shattered by society's limits. So this is the conversation you want to listen to. So Shelly, welcome to Straight Talk. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for having me. I'm excited for this conversation.
So am I. I love human beings like you that are really just taking all of their skills, their talents, and everything that you have worked so hard in the last years creating and learning. But then you also don't keep that treasure to yourself, but want to help others, right? And I think that's so freaking powerful, because one of the things I'm a big advocate on is using all of your wisdom to create impact. Right? So tell us a little bit about you. I want to know a little bit more. So tell us, who is Shelly anyway? Who is Shelly?
Well, as you said, I'm a Christian and I am a special education teacher. When I was 9 years old, I knew at that time I wanted to be a teacher, but I thought at that time I wanted to be a primary general education teacher. And all through the rest of my grade school years, that is where my mind stayed focused. But occasionally I would get this little thought, this little voice saying, you should teach special education. And I know I don't look it, but I was born in the 1900s. And
I know. I heard somebody say that on Instagram and I wanted to punch them in the face. Like, you know, all of you who were born in the 1900s, I'm like, really? That's what we're doing now? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. But when I started kindergarten was right around the same time that the special education law came into being. And so that with that law, it was that we now were educating people who learned differently, people who had the old term of mentally retarded, just everybody and anybody who had any kind of a different learning style.
Yeah.
And in my school, there was a few students like that, but I never saw them. They were kind of cordoned off down a little hall in a tiny little room. And so I just got this impression that was erroneous about they must be very different from me. They must be limited in their abilities. They must I would not have anything in common with them. And so every time I heard that voice, that was the thought that I had. It was like, oh no, I can't go into special education. I'm not going to have high enough expectations. It's just not a good fit. Go through high school, finish high school. And then I thought, you know, I do want to be a teacher, but maybe I'm just not cut out for it. So I became a paraprofessional. In my state, I could do that right away. I had some college credit hours and it worked out. And I found out when I was being a paraprofessional that I absolutely did love being in the classroom, helping the students learn, helping those. And what I didn't realize was the students that I was assigned to help the most were the students who were going to be in special education.
Interesting.
And my husband and I met and married, and we moved overseas. And he was Air Force. And when we moved overseas, I was able to substitute because they have it set up different because we were on a military base. So I was able to substitute. So I started substituting. And the kids that I was drawn to the most were the kids that I eventually found out would be in special education. Our final year overseas, I became a paraprofessional for 5 students in kindergarten who were special education students.
Wow, that's awesome.
And 2 out of those 5 had the biggest behaviors that I had ever seen. And this whole journey is spelled out even more explicitly in the first chapter of my book. But those 2 little guys, I just fell in love with so much. And I loved finding the reason behind the behavior. I believe very much that behavior is communication. And so I wanted to find out. And I was taught by fabulous people over there. They led me by such great examples. And so then we came back to the United States and I said, okay, I get it. I'm going into special education. And from there, my passion has grown. My enthusiasm has grown. My knowledge, of course, has grown. And I just see things very differently now than I did when I was 9 years old.
Yeah, you know, it's so beautiful too. And you're right. I remember that because my youngest brother has needed special education. He was also just in a room somewhere in the high school. I would only see him at lunch because we were pretty close in age. So I would only see him at lunch, but he was in the special education room and I didn't understand it. You know, as a kid, I didn't understand it. I understood that he needed some special attention. I didn't understand why they were like in this one room next to the office, like where no other classrooms really were. Right. And we've really come a long way, haven't we, Shelly? Thank God. You know,
We haven't.
Yet. That's true. But we have since when I was a kid. I say that because I have a grandson right now who has autism and he's nonverbal. But he's in a regular school and he plays with regular kids in regular, whatever regular means, right? But he plays with kids that are not in special education outside in the playground and things like that. So I find that fascinating and fantastic at the same time. And sometimes a little concerning because he is special education. So sometimes he gets a little bullied. Right. So we still got that. We're always going to have that dynamic. I don't think that's ever going to go away.
Probably
not. But I love that you got that experience. And I always think that life does that. Like when you have something that's a gift, something that really is your gift that a lot of people don't really know how to do or really have articulated it in that way. I believe in God too. I'm a Christian and I believe God will always direct your path. And sometimes we'll go left and right. He's like, we're going to bring you back. Let's go back here. Yep. This is where I want you to go. If I have to fly you behind overseas, you're going to get this.
Yep.
I love that so much.
Absolutely.
I love that so much. So, you know, I want to know, like, how did, you know, so now that you said that, because you made that comment, we are, but we're not. Right. So tell me about some of the things that you have had your hands in where you've seen change. You know, like how have you taken this on as your thing? Right. Because I wish, like I said, when I was much younger, that I had someone helping me with my IEP. I didn't understand it. I was trying to understand it. And I was trying to help my son to the best of my ability. I think I didn't do as good as I should have. Right. So I'm just wondering, what have you seen changes in, you know, where have you seen like your own experience of helping others in this area?
Great question. So in so much of what I do as an IEP consultant or coach, I go into school districts and I provide professional development to the teachers.
Okay.
And so many of them are so open to hearing what I have to say. Whereas in the beginning of my teaching career, special education, as you said, even when I started teaching, it was still isolated. There was still, and to a degree, there are still those people who think that anyone who's found eligible for special education is somehow less than everyone else. Yeah. That, you know, the accommodations and the modifications that they are receiving to help them access their general education makes their content easier. That, and so now I'm seeing so much more openness and understanding of, oh yeah, no, this doesn't make somebody less than, it just is different, and different isn't bad. We have in my opinion, a really wrong perceptive that if it's different, it's bad.
Yeah.
And that's completely not the case. And so seeing that openness from teachers, seeing the openness from society, you know, where we are more accepting, we're still very far away from being good at it, but we are down the road from where we started. You know, it's not that fight anymore for families to have their child educated amongst their same age peers, where,
that's good.
Again, early on, it was, what are you doing? Why are you bringing these kids in with my kids? They don't deserve an education in the same way that my kids do, or they don't.
Yeah.
And I know you didn't ask me this question, but in my book, that's a lot of what the families talk about, is
good.
That they basically, from the time they find out that their child has a diagnosis, or if they don't have a diagnosis of anything, and they get into school and then they find out that they're having some learning difficulties and then they're found eligible for special education, from that moment forward, they are always defending their child's rights. Their child's right to be alive, their child's right to be educated, their child's right to be happy, their child's right to be in society.
That's right.
I'm hoping, and I think, again, it's changed minusculely, but it is changing, because there are more companies that are hiring people who are neurodivergent.
Yeah.
There are more opportunities for activities and fun things in our society for people who are different in their learning and in their abilities than other people. And so there have been those incremental changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not part of the disability community in the sense that I have a disability. And so even when I'm saying it's been incremental, I'm sure to a lot of, and I know to a lot of the people in the disability community, they feel that it's even smaller than what I see the progress.
Oh, I see. Okay. See, and me being someone who has had, you know, these challenges in our family, mm-hmm. I saw it a little bit differently. I actually saw it as something that I've seen improve quite a bit. And maybe it's because of my own personal view and challenges, right? Because like I said, when I was a young mother, I was a very young mother. And so I didn't know. And for me, it was a constant struggle with the,
right.
with the principals, with the teachers, I'm like, come on, help me out here, guys. You know?
Right.
So, but now I, like with my daughter, having my grandson who has, autism, I see so much support for her that I see it differently, right? I actually see it like, oh, for me, it looks like it's getting way better, but you guys are in the trenches, right? So you know more, but I think from personal experience, I've seen it improve quite a bit, right?
That's awesome.
And yeah. I at least from my generation and what I went through to my daughter. So I only can compare that.
Right.
And I wanted to talk to you about reframing the possibility now, right? Because you say that, I believe it was in your intro, you said, we know who we are, but not who we will be. Did I quote that right? Okay.
Pretty close. So, yep.
Okay. So then how can like educators and families start holding like these positive future visions, right? For these students with disabilities without downplaying the challenges or the current challenges. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I think so. And we'll see if my answer does make sense to your what you're saying, because I think I know what you're asking. And so I think very much, again, what I said in the intro about the caterpillar turning into the butterfly, there is struggle there. The caterpillar dissolves into its cells. And just when it thinks its life is over, it reforms into the butterfly. But that's not enough. It still struggles and has to struggle to get out of the cocoon for its wings to soar and take it everywhere it's going to go.
Right.
In our society, we have this idea now that any sort of suffering or struggle is bad.
Yeah.
And we are forgetting that. Yeah. That grows character. That helps us develop. And it's not fun, but it's okay to have struggles. And again, when you're struggling, you're just struggling. That doesn't mean that in some way, shape, or form, you are less than the person next to you who isn't struggling in that moment in the same way. We all struggle with things.
Yeah.
But we have just developed this idea that, oh no, you know, we can't be sick. We can't be unhappy. We can't have to work hard to accomplish something. And it's all just this, you know, everybody should be happy and rainbows and unicorns all the time. And that's not reality. And so if we can embrace, it's okay. Our brain is a muscle. You don't build muscles unless you do something, unless you have resistance. You have to have resistance of learning, and that's okay. Some people, their resistance is very minute because learning comes very easily to them, and it's their brain is wired the way that we have taught teachers to teach.
Right.
But other people, their brain is wired differently than the traditional teacher is taught to teach. And so they just need to have it taught to them differently. In so many cases, I have seen that over and over and again. That's kind of the reason for that. I keep pointing behind me because the copy of the book is behind me.
Oh, but, I love that.
The stories in the book, it's 9 different families that I interviewed, and every one of the families taught me something, which is the idea of the title, Those Who Can't Teach, because they have been told by society, by family members, by educators, by medical professionals, you won't walk, your child won't have a good life. You know, they're never going to talk. It's all these negative things. And yet, as I knew these families before the interview processes, but absolutely for certain during the interview processes, I learned so much from each family and each individual, so they can teach us if we are willing to learn from them. And at the end of each of their chapters, I have like a final paragraph that says the things that I learned. And as a special educator and these families I had known for anywhere from 1 year to 25, 30 years at this point, I still had no idea, Nina, until I interviewed them and really sat down with them. And they were very honest and very raw about what was happening in their lives. I felt like at that point I had maybe a thimble full of knowledge. And again, I learned so much. And for families to be told, you're never going to, you can't be, you won't, whatever negative thing it is, we need to switch that to say, you know what? It's going to be tough. You're going to struggle, but you're going to become a butterfly at some point.
Yeah.
And your life is not going to look at all what you think it's going to look like.
That is so true, right? And also, you know, people who are neurodivergent, have some sort of special abilities, whatever. I also feel like not only do they become butterflies, but they also become masters at things. And, you know, all of us have like this thing, this unique thing, or this way of doing something. So as you're talking, I'm thinking, when we were doing the IEP for my son, right? It was like, oh, he needs more time to, you know, take the test. He needs more time to do this, more to whatever. Another teacher in the room, the whole thing, right? We're trying to fight for all these things.
Right.
And then, you know, it was like, oh, he doesn't need an IEP. Like, it was a constant back and forth. I'm like, yeah, he does. He does.
Right.
And back, you know, we're talking about 1990. 95, somewhere around there. They weren't also very quick to diagnose him with ADHD, even though he had all the symptoms and then some, right?
Right.
Anyway, yeah. I decided to educate myself as he started to get a bit older because it was becoming a big of challenge, even for me and his relationship, because we weren't on the same page. And I have a little ADHD as well, so it just wasn't working. But what I ended up doing was really encouraging him in the things that he loved, which was beats, music, stuff like now he is an engineer, runs his own company, has a couple of songs that are on the billboards and all that kind of stuff. Why? He focused in on what he's a master at, right? Mm-hmm. And it took him a long time to get there. So I agree with you 1,000%. And I think, you know, I wanted to talk to you too about that piece of how we can get everybody on board to help, right? Because I know that you do, you help a lot of families with IEPs. So I wanted to talk to you about, I know you've written and led thousands of them. So first of all, can you break down to us what an IEP is, maybe for a parent who's listening and doesn't know? And then we'll dig into that a little bit. What is an IEP?
Yeah, so the letters stand for Individualized Education Program or Plan, and it is the document that drives the specially designed instruction that a child needs that is found eligible for special education. Not everyone needs specially designed instruction, and if they just need accommodations and some maybe related services of occupational therapy or physical therapy, they can get something called a Section 504, mm-hmm. and that covers that. The IEP is that specially designed instruction piece. And so then what that looks like is going to depend on your child's needs. If your child just needs some reinforcement of skills after they've had all their academics taught to them by the general education teachers, then maybe they just come in for some support time, you know, 15, 20, 30, 45 minutes a day, whatever the time is. There's a team of people of which the parent is an equal member. It's a general education teacher, a special education teacher, the parent, the child, if depending on their age and the level that the parent thinks is they're ready to come in, they do have to start coming in at age 16. They don't have to come in. They have to be invited at age 16. And that's called transition. And we really want them at that point, like, okay, you're going to be done with school soon. How do we progress forward? And we want to definitely include you in this. At that IEP meeting, so I said the general education, the special education, the parent, mm-hmm. and then there's usually a representative from the school that can make decisions about resources and schedules and knows the curriculum and that sort of thing. And then that person can also be the person who looks at all the assessment data and can relate what those details mean to the parent. Sometimes that person is the same, that covers both of those roles. Sometimes they do have two separate people. And that's a minimum.
Okay.
If you have related services, if you have other people that, you know, feel like they need to be in the meetings. I've been in meetings, Nina, where there's been one or two people with the parent, and then there's been 15 or 20 people with the school part of the team. So it can be very daunting and overwhelming.
And intimidating.
Intimidating, 100%. And so it's very important to me to be with parents when they go through this process at any stage, but definitely in the beginning, because there's so much that happens in those meetings. You know, you're getting fed from a fire hose, basically.
Yeah.
These are all the things that your child is struggling with. And it's unfortunate that an IEP meeting has that negative undertone. But the point of the meeting is like, I love your child, but this meeting is how can we help your child shore up, build up, strengthen, learn in the way that they learn. And so we do have to focus on the negatives during that meeting. But that's very hard as a parent to sit there and hear all the negatives about your child.
It really is. I remember that feeling, actually. I didn't like the way that felt. And I also didn't like feeling so isolated and alone in a meeting with all the teachers, the principal, the whatever. Like the room was full of everybody else. And it was just mom, right? And sometimes dad would come if he wasn't working. But it was very intimidating. And I didn't know if I was doing the right thing, if I was making mistakes. So I did want to ask you, like, what do you think is one of the biggest mistakes that the teams are making or teams make during these IEP meetings? Like, and really, how can that be fixed, like, on the spot? Like, if you see this mistake happening, how, you know, let's empower the parent a little bit here. So what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that maybe the teams make in an IEP meeting?
Yeah, I think there's several things. It's going to be hard to pinpoint, but the one thing that I have discovered recently—that
was honest.
Yeah, sorry. I'm an honest person. Is that we do not have discussions. It is called a team. So when you have a team, you have discussions. But what often happens is, and this has happened so many times when I've gone in as a coach or another term for what I do is advocate. If I make a suggestion of, you know, maybe we could try this, like they want to write it into the IEP right away. And I'm like, whoa, just because I suggested it doesn't mean I know what's the appropriate thing for this particular child. Cause I usually have rare knowledge of the actual child and their learning. But as a master IEP coach, that's what I come in and do is I ask a lot of questions like, how else can we solve this conundrum that we're finding ourselves in? How else can we, you know, provide resources if the school just doesn't have whatever resource we're asking for? Right. Well, what other ways can we do this? What other ways can we approach this? And it's so often where I'll be in these meetings and the occupational therapist gives their present levels and then their goals, and then the speech therapist, and then the physical therapist, and then the special ed teacher, and then the general ed teacher. And nobody collaborates with anybody else. Yeah. Nobody gives feedback into the other person's. And it's only until the parent, or in my case, when I go, I say something about, well, how's that going to look?
Yeah.
How can we make this work? You know, if it's an academic goal, can we work on that in OT or PT? If it's an OT or PT goal, can we work on that in the general education classroom or in the special education classroom? What does that look like? And we have this really, and this feeds into that, what I was just talking about is that we just all give all this information and we don't really have a discussion about it. We think that if a parent is sitting at the meeting and they're nodding along and they're, okay, you know, maybe they ask a question or two throughout the meeting, that they have had meaningful participation in the development of that child's IEP. To me, that's like saying, if I go to the movie and I watch the movie and I laugh or I cry or I get mad at the, you know, the bad person, or I'm happy, then I've participated in the development of that movie.
Such a good analogy. That's really good.
I don't have the money behind me to say that I have participated in every movie that I have ever gone to watch. So obviously I have not had meaningful participation in making of that movie. And if that's all I'm doing at an IEP meeting is just sitting there and nodding along, I don't ask questions. Or if I ask questions, I'm just like given a quick answer and then we move on to something else, but we don't actually have discussion about it. I, as a parent, am not having meaningful participation. And these words that I'm saying them specifically because they are part of the special education law. Yeah. I'm not a lawyer. This is not to be construed as legal advice, but that's the words in the law. We wouldn't have my kind of position. We wouldn't have special education if there wasn't a law. So I definitely refer back to it. And it is, it's meaningful participation in the development of the child's IEP. So we as teams do a poor job of having the parent truly have meaningful participation.
Is it ever wise, or is it something that can happen where when the parent goes, because I remember being very intimidated and I just agreed with whatever the team said because I honestly did not know what my rights were. So I'm just wondering, at a meeting like that, is there any way that a parent can go, okay, let me take this information with me. I'm going to think about it, look it over and come back. Can you do that? Or does it have to be done at the meeting?
No, you can absolutely do that. And that's a great question. One of the things that I work on with my clients is I help them develop all of their concerns before the meeting.
Yeah.
And then we put that into a document and I write it as succinctly as possible, knowing like I use the educator view and then also pull in the parent. And then we have that directly put into the IEP. Okay. But absolutely. At the meeting itself, you know, the law allows for 10 days after the IEP is written before it gets implemented. So during that 10 days, if you have a question or you disagree with something, you can absolutely call the team back together. Or even if it's beyond that 10 days and stuff is going on, once a year, the school is required to re-look at the IEP and update it and revise it for another year. But at any time during the school year, the parent can absolutely call the team together, call an IEP meeting, and have discussion and possibly alter or amend the IEP because, you know, something's not working, a goal has already been met, and we've got, you know, 3/4 of the IEP length of time to go. And so we want to change it so something else is being worked on. The parent absolutely has that right at any time to call. I don't recommend like doing it every month, but, you know,
of course,
if you are feeling like, you know, hey, I'm just not clear. And that's, you can call that meeting at any time. And that's why one of the things I work on with my parents, and I really push with my teachers when I'm providing the professional development, is clearly and specifically write everything that you've talked about in the meeting, because we all have great intentions when we're in person and we say, oh yeah, that's a great idea, we're going to do that. But if we don't write it down, we're not going to remember in 3 months what we talked about.
And absolutely.
If it's not written down, it doesn't have to happen.
You know, that is so true. And there was times where I didn't remember. And I would say, but I thought we said X, Y, Z. Oh, look at the notes. It's not there. And I'm like, dang it. I could have sworn we said we were going to do that, you know? So you're right. You're right. And I wanted to ask you a question about your faith, because you started with saying you're a Christian, right? So Christian advocacy sometimes do go hand in hand, right? Because I think that's our calling, is to help others. So how does your faith clearly fuel your work? Like, how does your Christian worldview, when you're walking into these meetings or writing this up, how does that influence the way you advocate for inclusion, or maybe even helping teams collaborate, maybe with empathy, right? Because sometimes they just are, let's be real, when you are in this field, a teacher, you know, all that's a lot to take on. And I've noticed way more people now that I speak to have children with special abilities. Way, way, way more, right? Which is kind of shocking to me, quite frankly. But I'm wondering, they must be also tired. They must be also like frustrated, right? They must be like, okay, another IEP. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, let's just be human here for a second, right?
Right.
So I'm just wondering, as your Christian worldview, you know, how does that influence the way you advocate for the inclusion and the help that this child and parent needs, while also having empathy for the teams?
Excellent question. And I will be honest, when I taught, I didn't necessarily have empathy for my gen ed teachers, for some of them, because they just didn't seem to get it. They never seemed to.
That's funny,
because
you were like on the other side of that at one point, right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it frustrated me, because they wouldn't want to help. And what finally dawned on me, and I say it dawned on me, the Lord finally made it clear to me that a lot of gen ed teachers, I'm not going to say every one of them, and if there are any listening, what I'm about to say, they're probably going to be, that's not me. They're fearful.
Yeah.
I think they're fearful that they are putting their blood, sweat, and tears into their lesson plans, and they are still not able to reach every student that comes to them. We developed this law, and we said everybody that the team decides should be included to whatever amount is going to go into these general education classrooms. But the amount of instruction we require our gen ed teachers to get in their undergrad is like maybe 2 classes out of their entire 4 years of college.
Wow.
So they don't have the training that
the
they
tools.
Need. And having that empathy now, and remembering that, they didn't get training for this. They're not required to have training for this. And yet the law says they should be educating these students. So remembering that when I go into these meetings and talking to the teachers and letting them know, look, I know you don't have the training for this, so let's get it written into the IEP. There's a section for that where you can go get the training for this.
Oh,
we
awesome.
Want to provide you the training for this. The second thing that helps me is I pray a lot. I pray for myself to have the words to say, to have the ideas, to be that out of the box thinker, to be that solution finder and that idea bringer. And to try to, you know, to come up with like the analogy that I said before about going to the movies and the meaningful participation. Those are things that the Lord, I truly believe, gives me. Because I don't think I could come up with those kinds of things on
my
own.
Yeah.
The concept, like I said, that little voice inside my head when I was growing up, that was God. Yeah. He was telling me, you know, this is going to be your path. Let's get you excited about it now. I didn't listen. Not only do I pray for the people that are going to be at the teams, but I pray for that collaboration. I pray and ask, you know, I pray that these people know you, Lord Jesus, because knowing that I am not perfect, they are not perfect, but you are perfect. I want them to experience what I, what I feel. I feel that love. I feel that, oh, I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to be all things to all people at all times.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to have mistakes. I'm allowed to struggle. I'm allowed to learn.
Yeah.
And so that's, I mean, my faith has propelled me, I think, exponentially, because there are so many things. And again, this is, you know, the caterpillar, I am the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. I never thought that I would be doing, you know, on stage speaking, speaking on podcasts, advocating for families, teaching teachers. I just thought I was going to be in the classroom my whole life. And there's more to my story that I did, but never thought I would this. And so that's why I have the you know, my shirt says hashtag no limits. There's butterflies on my shirt. You can kind of see them.
Oh, I see them. Yeah.
And I mean, that's, you know, there's butterflies all around me. Because that's always, that's it. You know, God did that.
Yeah, Jesus did so that. Good.
You know, he was the caterpillar. He literally did die.
Yeah.
And then
he
rose again and became that butterfly.
Right.
And just knowing all of that stuff and truly believing it and truly having it in my heart helps me see.
It changes you. Yeah.
Differently.
It does, doesn't it? It changes you. Yes. You know, I was talking to one of my students, right? And they're trans and they're open about it. They're very proud of the fact that they're trans, right? So we were talking about God and faith and challenges. And it was in a way that was beautiful, non-judgmental. Mm-hmm. They were able to receive it for the first time without feeling like I was another attacker, as they called it. You know, at first I was like, oh, this is going to be tough for me because they're going to think I'm attacking them for my faith. But it ended up being a really beautiful, like a really, truly heart-to-heart, beautiful conversation. And I really believe God puts us in these situations to show us empathy and love and compassion and patience and kindness where maybe others haven't. You know, I always keep in mind, I think it was Gandhi who said, I would have been a Christian if it wasn't for the Christians that I knew. And it made me that's exactly what my reaction was like.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, ah, okay. And then of course, right now I'm in the Word. I'm really deep in the Word right now. And I'm looking at where he was with tax collectors and prostitutes and all this stuff. And people are like, how dare you be around them? And I'm like, I get it, God. I get it. It's love. It's empathy. It's compassion, but also standing in truth. Also not denying who you are. And I love you for this, Shelley. You're my sister in Christ. I'm super proud of what you're doing in the world. I love everything you're doing. And I love the way you're helping, because I can tell you from my experience how much I would have loved to have had you help me with such a thing as this, right? Because I think my kid would have really gotten the support he needed. He never finished high school. He actually signed out of school the last couple of months from school. They just didn't want to deal with him anymore. They said, well, you're 18. Here you go. You can sign yourself out. You know, you don't need mom's permission. And he was like, I don't. They were like, no, you don't. Absolutely. You're an adult. They never told me, never discussed it with me. And it was, I think it was like February, and he was due to graduate in June. So, so he signed himself to school. It was heartbreaking. It was horrible. And there was nothing I can do about it. It was the most horrendous feeling ever. But had I had a Shelley on my side, right, I would have been able to see the IEPC, what they were doing with him or not doing with him. You know what I mean? Like, I would have been able to see that, and I wasn't able to. So Shelley, before I let you go, I need everyone to know how they can actually find an amazing coach advocate like you, how they can connect with you, you know, just so that they don't go through what I went through. You know, and at the same time, I'm thinking about my daughter as well. Like, I'm going to talk to her and make sure that they're helping her with everything, because if not, I'm going to connect her with you. So give us that information, because that's important.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. The best and easiest way is through my email, which is my first name, at myfirstandlastname.com. So Shelly at ShellyKino.com. And if you're writing that, make sure that you get my second E. Where is it at? Right there. Because it's that S-H-E-L-L-E-Y.
E-Y,
If you can't remember that, if you type in Shelly Kino or you type in, you know, something about butterflies and IEPs, it's probably going to propagate my information. My website is the same thing, ShellyKino.com. And on there you can access an email. And my podcast is on, there's a link on my website, but you can hear my podcast, hashtag No Limits, all the same places that you're listening to Nina's. So listen to Straight Talk, No Sugar Added, and hashtag No Limits back to back, and you'll be set. Man, you'll have a great day.
Yeah, a really good day. And I'm going to make sure to tell my daughter that too, like, because she drives a lot back and forth to work. I'm just going to give her the podcast and say, babe, listen to this every day, you know, so she can start getting herself educated as well. Because she's kind of lost sometimes in it too. Like, I don't know, mom, and they said this, but I'm not sure. And I'm always trying to help her with that. But now we have Shelly. Now we have Shelly, y'all. Now we have Shelly. Thank you so much for being here. Honestly, beautiful conversation, beautiful human. And I'm just like so grateful to God that you are here doing what you do. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate you and being here as well.
Thank you. Guys, I told you, right? I know. I love her too. So I'm going to make sure to put all of her information below. I will put, the website there for you, all of her, you know, info that she gives me, all the links, all of that, because you know what? I know that a lot of you are either going through this or know somebody who is, because I'm telling you, it is for me, like every time maybe because I'm more acceptable or susceptible, I should say, to it because of my grandson and things like that. But I really want you guys to understand that it takes a lot of patience and love and empathy and heart to do this kind of work and to really help people, because they are humans too and deserve to have someone fight on their behalf if they can't. So make sure you pick up Shelly's book, make sure you listen to her podcast, and definitely make sure that you contact her. So thank you guys for being here. I love you more than you know. This is Nina Perez, Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. Until next time.